from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Although combat roles were not open to women until 2015, female U.S. military personnel were present in Afghanistan before then. Journalist and Army veteran Eileen Rivers will join us to talk about the contributions female soldiers made in the Middle East. And we'll talk about her book, Beyond the Call, Three Women on the Front Lines in Afghanistan. Then at 10:30, there's been lots of research on the effects of PTSD on veterans returning from war, but little on the impact of grief. And we'll look at a new study from UC Irvine that focuses on the grief veterans experience. That's all coming up next on this Veterans Day after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. In Beyond the Call, Three Women on the Front Lines in Afghanistan, journalist Eileen Rivers shares the stories of women who served side by side with their male colleagues to help defeat the Taliban. The women, who were members of the Army's so-called female engagement teams, were especially skilled in intelligence gathering from Afghan women. Eileen Rivers is digital content editor for USA Today's editorial page and a member of their editorial board, and she's also a veteran of the U.S. Army, where she served as an Arabic linguist. She joins us now to talk about her book and how women in combat uniquely contribute to making the nation safer. And Eileen Rivers, pleasure to have you with us. Welcome.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, I appreciate having you, and congratulations on the book, which is an important book, and an important book coming from, I want to say on this Veterans Day, someone who not only served the nation in the military for a number of years, but also comes from a military family. I know your father and all your siblings were also part of the armed forces.
That's right. Yep. Everybody served. My father, and you know, I like to say my mom served too. Military spouses don't get nearly enough credit for all the work that they do. My mom wasn't actually in the military, but she was certainly a military spouse and had to move and took care of us kids when my dad was away. So yeah, my dad was Army. I had a brother who was Navy, a sister who was Navy, another brother who was Army, and I was Army. So Army-Navy games were always interesting in my house.
Yeah, but you all got along in spite of those Army-Navy rivalries.
Exactly. That's right. That's right.
Well, I want to talk about your book, because the book really brings focus upon women who have served on this Veterans Day, and especially we're talking about Iraq and Afghanistan, and your experiences, certainly as an Arabic translator, have helped a great deal in understanding just how difficult their work was. And the difficulty had to do with not only questioning and searching, but protecting these women. These women were, in many respects, in very vulnerable situations and positions because they were women, and because the Taliban were, to put it mildly, misogynistic and against women advancing in any way.
Absolutely. So are you talking about the women who served in the U.S. military, or the Afghan women, or both?
Well, let's talk about the women in the military first on this Veterans Day. We're talking about women who were part of the female engagement team, which is originally known as the Lionesses, or the Lionesses team, yeah?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So the women were sort of in a precarious sort of catch-22 situation, because part of what they had to do, because they were out there and female engagement teams attached to all male combat units, was they were serving right there alongside men in combat before combat roles were officially open to women, doing the same thing that men were doing. So, you know, if the Taliban attacked, they had to pull out their weapons and fight, just like those infantrymen who, by the way, had more official combat training than female engagement team members had. They had to see what men did and do their best to do the exact same thing.
And but be exposed to IEDs and all the rest of it, really, yeah?
Absolutely, exposed to the same dangers, took on the same, you know, body injuries, the same PTSD. One of the women I interviewed had a traumatic brain injury when she returned. I interviewed another woman who I didn't write as much about, but she was actually kind of my inspiration for the book, who came back and didn't quite admit that she had PTSD, but just from what she was describing to me, you know, she had horrible flashes of temper. She was often wondering why she was getting angry about things after she returned that didn't necessarily anger her before she left. It was clear to me that she was describing PTSD, but one of the problems that she ran into was that she was pregnant when she returned, and she was put in a unit that had never seen combat. So they actually didn't believe her. This was something that wasn't unusual for women to encounter. When they came back and said, yeah, I was in combat, I was on the front lines, depending on who they spoke to, they may not have been believed. So she didn't necessarily get the kind of PTSD care that she should have gotten, that her male colleagues would have gotten. But you're absolutely right. They were experiencing the same thing in combat, and they were suffering the same kinds of injuries.
And although there was a good deal of talk about not nation building, that's really what was going on to a great degree, especially during the Bush administration. And I'm wondering about the role of these women, because they were helping, for example, find contraband that was on other women. They were involved in voting and getting women to register to vote and go into the shuras and encouraging them to vote. I mean, these were things that really put them in terribly vulnerable positions, because the Taliban were trying to, you know, keep women even out of being educated, let alone vote and do those kinds of things like develop businesses or micro-lending, these kinds of things.
Absolutely. And that's why, with your initial question, I was asking whether you were talking about the Afghan women being in this, you know, danger from the Taliban, or the American military females. And they both really were. And part of that unique female engagement team mission was making sure that they did things the men couldn't do. So the men couldn't, on a very basic level, frisk Afghan women. That was a cultural barrier that initially in the war we realized we were breaching, and because of that, we weren't making progress finding members of the Taliban. We were sort of building this resistance within communities who then didn't want to talk to us because we were breaching their cultural norms. So female engagement teams helped to alleviate that. They went in and they were frisking Afghan women and getting a lot of the intelligence that men couldn't get. But beyond that, they were also helping Afghan women overcome some of these incredibly sexist, what we would consider kind of throwback problems that they were having because of Taliban rule. So they were going in and helping Afghan women to register to vote, which was against Taliban law. They were going in and helping Afghan women start small businesses. And that doing that also helped female engagement teams figure out where the Taliban was more powerful in some areas and where it was less powerful in other areas. If you saw progress on the part of Afghan women without a lot of community resistance and without a lot of fear, that let female engagement teams know, okay, this is an area where what we're doing is working because women are making progress. And the opposite was true in areas where there was fear and where women couldn't work and couldn't do a lot of those things that female engagement teams are really trying to help them do.
We're talking with USA Today journalist Eileen Rivers about her book, Beyond the Call, Three Women on the Front Lines in Afghanistan. And if you would like to give us a call, we invite you to do that. We would like to hear from you. And if you have thoughts about what you're hearing, or if you just want to join our conversation with any questions or comments, you can do that now. We're going to go up to the half hour. So if you want to join us, call now. 866-733-6786 is the number for your calls. And again, you can join us forthwith at 866-733-6786. Also, you can get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org. Be particularly interesting to hear from some veterans who were in Afghanistan or Iraq who have some experiences about what we're talking about. But we welcome all of you to the program interactively. If you have something you'd like to ask or say, or bring to the conversation, again, join us now at 866-733-6786. And Eileen Rivers, a lot of profiles here that are of brave women on both sides, as you're intimating, and extraordinary women, if I may put it. There, for example, Major Marie Rodriguez, whom you profile, was actually training Afghan women to be police officers. And this was not only dangerous work in general, but it was certainly dangerous to become a police officer where the Taliban were concerned. So it wasn't only that they were helping on all kinds of humanitarian fronts and business fronts and getting information from, well, about insurgents and so forth, but they were actually going to work on behalf of the country in ways that the Taliban was absolutely against.
Right. So part of what all of these women were trying to do was train up Afghan women and specifically Afghan female police to take over when female engagement teams left. And so they were trying to train them to be able to frisk women and find contraband. And also to be able to, beyond that, stand up women's rights in a very big way in Afghanistan. And so you're right. One of the things I profiled Maria Rodriguez doing, and one of the big connections she made, was with one of the female police officers that she was training. It was a huge barrier for them to even get, you know, uniforms or to get weapons. I'm talking about the Afghan female police forces at this point, to get the proper training, to get the proper education, to actually do the job. And so Maria often described it, as many of the women did, making progress was sort of like, you know, you take a couple of steps forward and then you take a couple of steps back, because a lot of the women dropped out of the program because they were being threatened by the Taliban. They were being threatened by the local community, men in the local community who didn't think women should be working. So that was a really big challenge.
And there was also one of the other women that you portray, you give attention to, is a woman named Sheena Adams, a sergeant, actually. Talk about Kevlar sealing in conjunction with her, because this is important, I think, for people to understand what the Kevlar sealing was.
Right, exactly. So the Kevlar sealing is kind of like the military enlisted for females version of what we call the glass ceiling in the civilian world, where women only get so far in terms of promotion and leadership. And a lot of women who served in combat who were enlisted kind of butt up against that Kevlar ceiling, because they would go overseas, they would do all of this combat work. But in Sheena Adams' case specifically, and in the case of a lot of women whose careers kind of followed her career, kind of paralleled her career, she went over there, she did a lot of the work, and then she came back and she couldn't get promoted, because when she was over there, she wasn't actually doing her job. She left her job behind. She was a helicopter mechanic in order to go out on these combat missions. So she was serving this incredibly important purpose. She comes back, and in order to get promoted, of course, you're judged on your job. Well, when she was over there, she wasn't doing her job. So she missed out on the opportunity to get promoted. Unlike men, when men go, you know, overseas in a combat role, well, that was their job. Of course, this is different now because roles have been open to women. But these were the women who kind of were the last brick in the wall, so to speak, for setting that in motion. There have been women who have been in combat from the beginning of war in this country, which I point out in the book as well. And with each generation, there's been more progress. I look at the female engagement team as that last generation to kind of, you know, put the brick in the wall to complete this ability for women to actually be in combat. But before those roles were opened, a lot of women were hitting the Kevlar ceiling. And she's a prime example of that. She couldn't get promoted, and she ultimately ended up leaving the military.
And as you indicated earlier, there was perhaps more danger in putting up this facade about women not being in combat, because so often they were exposed to combat, and they were exposed to other kinds of dangers and perils that we can recount here, and we can also imagine. But I'm also wondering, since you talked about going back to women in the armed forces in general, there are a lot of stories here. And let me go back to one of the original stories, Deborah Sanson, who signed up as a man. And this is a fascinating story, actually fooled her mother into thinking that she was a he.
That's right. That was the ultimate test for her. She had actually tried to sign up a couple of times before she took on the moniker Robert Shirtless. She tried to sign up before as a man, and she got recognized and outed as a woman. So she tried to then go back to the drawing board and perfect her shtick of being a man, wearing the clothes of a man, walking like a man, talking like a man. And she thought, well, if I can fool my mom, then I'm ready. And so she put on all the garb. She kind of tried to take on the masculine, you know, role and attributes the best she could. She knocked on her mom's front door, and she started talking to her mom, and her mom did not recognize her. Her mom thought she was actually a man, and that's how she knew that she was ready to sign up. And indeed, the last time she signed up, she actually ended up passing for a very long period of time.
She could have been court-martialed, but she wasn't, right?
That's right. Yes, exactly. So that was illegal to do. I mean, that was a jailable offense in the military at that time. And she was an incredibly good soldier. There were men who were following her into battle. She was faster than a lot of the other men she was serving with. She was a better shot, just to give a little background for her. She kind of grew up in the country. She was adopted. Her mom actually, I use the word adopted loosely, she became sort of an indentured servant to a family because her mom was incredibly ill. Her dad was what we would consider now a deadbeat dad, kind of abandoned the family. And her mom had a lot of children that she couldn't take care of. And it wasn't unusual at that time for a child of parents who couldn't take care of them to become indentured servants. And that's actually what happened to her. And she was raised around a lot of boys in that new household.
And again, if you've just joined us, we're talking with Eileen Rivers, talking about her book, Beyond the Call, Three Women on the Front Lines in Afghanistan, but expanding the conversation really to talk about the role of women in the armed forces and in combat on this Veterans Day. And if you have something you'd like to contribute to the conversation, or if you have something you'd like to say or ask on that score, we welcome your involvement. You can join us at 866-733-6786 or get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you have. Talk directly to women veterans here who may want to join the program. Forum at KQED.org. And let's have Tom join us. Tom, you're on the air.
Oh, great show, Michael, and thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I'd just like to say that I was watching, you know, the History Channel yesterday, and they're having programs about frontline combat in Iraq and Afghanistan. And everything was going bad at first because all the male soldiers were male, and they were, you know, breaking down doors and roughing up people, shooting indiscriminately and so on. But then the light turned on, and all of a sudden they started knocking on the doors and being real polite, and then they were accepted by the people pretty much. I was wondering how much this had to do with the females in the special forces or operations there in Iraq and Vietnam. I mean, Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, thoughts on that, Irene Rivers?
Yeah, that's a great question, Tom. Thanks for your question, and thanks for calling in. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because in many ways, female engagement teams, at least for the women I spoke to, did have a huge influence on that. One of the women I mentioned already earlier, the woman who actually ended up having to leave the military, Sheena Adams, recalled a moment when she was attached to a combat unit, and initially they didn't want the women there. They didn't think the women could actually do anything to help. And when the men observed the style of questioning and interaction with local villagers, when they knocked on the doors and would try to have sort of a more open conversation that was less confrontational and less about interrogation and more about relationship building, they found that they actually got more information. So Sheena Adams recalls that by the time it was time for them to leave, the combat soldier said, well, we can't wait till you come back, because we've gotten more information with you here than we had gotten in all the time previously when we tried to knock on doors and talk to people. So I think what FETS really taught a lot of combat soldiers was that it was about relationship building, and you could get more information that way than trying to interrogate.
Well, who was the woman you profiled who was showing pictures of her, exchanging pictures of kids with Afghan women?
Yes, that was Maria. Right?
That's Maria, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And now, that kind of goes back to what I was saying about how it was difficult sometimes for them to build relationships with women at first. But that was the breakthrough moment for them.
You know, I have to ask you, since you're an African-American woman who served in the military, we're talking about all these ceilings for women, but there's always been a concerted effort by the military to say that there's great racial equity in the military. What about African-American women in the military? Your thoughts?
Well, you know, as you mentioned before, my father was in the military. And often the way I approach the question of race and being a female is that the military certainly tried to address issues of race long ago and long before they addressed issues of, you know, gender in the military. There was certainly a time before, you know, the race issue was thoroughly addressed, that African-American women had it much worse than other women. I mentioned two women in the book who were pilots, black female pilots, who were getting discriminated against by men, all men, black men, white men, and also getting discriminated against by their white female counterparts because they weren't allowed to fly at a time when white females were beginning to fly, still not equal with men, but certainly beginning to fly to help the cause during World War II. So there were certainly African-American women who had it difficult.
And this idea of getting women more involved in terms of autonomy economically and teaching them not only how to be police officers, but teaching them trades and ways of essentially bringing in some kind of income. I mean, I think it's important for people to understand, for example, particularly in Afghanistan, the insurgents really had great control over the villages economically. So we're talking about really a pattern, particularly under the Taliban, where there was, well, economic hegemony.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, men certainly also suffered under the Taliban. There were certain villages that were incredibly remote and that were, you know, absolutely destroyed, where it was hard for men to work. And in those villages, women often had it even worse than women did in other villages, because you had, you know, an economically strapped family where the man also wasn't working. Sometimes that would end up, you know, resulting in friction between the husband and wife in that relationship. And men also, as a matter of survival in some instances, took on the rule of the Taliban and used it to further oppress their women. So, you know, there were certainly villages where women had it even worse. And I think that's where, you know, Joanna Smoke, who is now Joanna Hipp, she's the one woman we haven't mentioned by name yet in the book, but she's one of those women who worked incredibly hard to restore voting rights for women. You know, so she worked with, you know, a woman whose real name I actually don't use in the book, but who became a feminist in Afghanistan and who was going into those villages and allowing women to escape from abusive husbands, was going into those villages and helping women register to vote, and was going into those villages and helping women become economically empowered.
Well, you compare women like her to suffragettes, I mean, just in terms of their courage, but not only their courage and their work but their dedication, but also what they stood for.
Absolutely. And it takes even, you know, in the conditions that Afghan women were living in, you know, I just think it takes an extra amount of courage to actually stand up and say, the woman that I mentioned in the book, who's an Afghan woman, said, you know, I know the Taliban is after me. I know that they're trying to kill me. I know that that is going to be my downfall, but I'm going to keep going anyway. She ran a women's center where she educated women. She taught them a skill so they could make money for their family. And that center was bombed at least twice. Once when the woman who ran the center was in it, and she was injured, she was not killed, and she continued the fight despite that.
The stories are inspiring, and you've done quite a job as a journalist. I commend you on that, and I thank you so much for joining us on this Veterans Day.
Thank you so much. Happy Veterans Day to everyone who's a veteran and listening and their family.
And thanks for the service to all the veterans who served. Eileen Rivers with us here, Beyond the Call. Three women on the front lines in Afghanistan. We've said goodbye to her because we're going to take another Veterans Day topic in the half hour coming up. We're going to talk about grief that veterans go through. And there's much more on that score that perhaps you haven't been told about or been informed about. Stay tuned. It's up ahead. I'm Michael Krasny.